Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, January 30th, 2025. I have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, welcoming on their studio phone line, Allison John Jack, Cranberry Outreach Specialist, with our good friends at University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Extension. Allison, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me this morning. I'm always glad to join.
How you been?
Very, very good. It's been a very productive winter season so far in the cranberry world, both from extension standpoint and from the researcher standpoint and from the grower standpoint. So getting a lot done and doing our best to stay healthy as we move through the colder months.
Good to hear. Good to hear. And certainly, you know, we're a little biased about cranberries here in central Wisconsin, especially here in Wisconsin Rapids. We were actually just talking with our Allison Dairyland a little bit about the cranberries and a little bit how much we love them around here. But while we're really proud of them, one of the things that I think is also really interesting is being able to dive into the logistics, the nuts and bolts about cranberries and talking a little bit more about them. And one of the things that I found interesting was the cranberry school. In this successful cranberry school, and that's kind of where we're going to start, Allison.
Absolutely. So annually, the entire cranberry community, so that's made up of the Growers Association, which does have its headquarters in Rapids, since that's where we have the most cranberry acres in Wisconsin is right here in Wood County. So the Cranberry Growers Association, as well as UW-Madison and Extension and the USDA, all along with obviously all the vendors and people who have their livelihoods helping to support cranberry growers in their farm operations, all kind of get together for 2 days in the middle of January. We met at the Dells, just over two weeks ago now, and had a really wonderful time with 325 attendees. It's a really lovely. Bring everyone together. All of the industry that supports cranberry growers are able to have a trade show. There's the pesticide training for growers who are ready for their recertifications to make sure everything stays safe and happy in that world. And then a lot of research presentations and a lot of networking. So it was really good to get everybody together. And feel free to ask more specific questions if you've got I know I just kind of gave the glossy overview, but I'm happy to dive into anything, too.
I appreciate that. Thanks. And Allison, one of the things that I appreciate about this, too, and the information you bring to us is something like this. And I whether you work in the cranberry industry or not, whether you like cranberries or not, you hear that. And I have to think that I'm not the only one that hears, well, that's for the betterment of all of us, whether we're talking about our economy or our ag industry, whatever the we may be talking about, sharing of information and being able to make connections that you might not otherwise without this school is vital to the future of our ag industry, our cranberry industry, our economy.
Absolutely. And all across Wisconsin, all across all the sectors. And I am also proud, of course, Wisconsin being the nationwide leader in cranberry production. We did have people fly out from Massachusetts and New Jersey just to attend this show. So it always feels very good.
That's a great note on that. And I want to piggyback off of that, Allison, because this is something that we talk about, you know, traveling or sharing of information, but there's not a ton of categories where we're number one. And people are coming to us for information. I find that very interesting, but also I think that's a real credit to the industry itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have really progressive growers in Wisconsin, and I think one of the more kind of shining gem moments of this cranberry school in particular was a grower panel where growers who have been trying out using drones for their input applications gave a presentation. They'd been trying it out for a couple of years and now said, okay, we have enough information to share back with the rest of the grower community. And so that was really popular as people are starting to think, are there ways that we can get our applications made and get our, measurements taken and that sort of thing faster or with reduced manpower? And so that was really well received by everyone.
That's really interesting.
And we're grateful for the growers who shared.
Yeah, yeah. To see how, and this is something that I really credit Matt Lippert with, him really opening my eyes to this, and the tech world and the ag world and how much they are hand in hand and working together and making it better for all of us.
Yes. And that's one actually that we, as the cranberry growers who started this, or who have been the pioneers in that world, saw it working first in cornfields, and saw, okay, there are people who have little businesses that have drones to make applications on contract for different corn growers, and kind of at first said, you know, well, maybe we could have someone do contract for us, but then realized, okay, we need a little more. I need it to say it has to be today, and therefore I should have the drone myself rather than have a contractor. But seeing that sharing across the ag sectors as well, when you see somebody else with a good idea saying, well, how can I bring this good idea to make my farm better?
And it's something that's noteworthy, certainly in this in part of the industry, but really throughout the whole ag industry, this has been noteworthy for quite some time. And I think it's, again, it's interesting, it's cool, but it also helps our economy, helps our ag industry. It's truly a win-win kind of thing. Speaking of helping the ag industry and that, Allison, I was just looking at the temperature, and it's almost 40 degrees right now in the middle of January, at the end of January, I should say. And that throws you a little bit, especially longtime, yes, you know, Midwesterners like us and everything. I'm curious of the, because of this stuff, how the ice conditions are, you know, helping or not helping this year, and how that differs from last year.
Well, I have to say, even though I hate to see it be 40 degrees today, this winter is so far a lot better than last winter was. Mm. One of the important practices that cranberry growers take advantage of is every fifth year or so, they'll put down about a quarter inch layer of sand. And this layer of sand covers the vines a little bit and gives them a hormonal cue to send out more runners and get fresh growth. So kind of like a grape grower, like vineyards do pruning. We don't have to go out and physically prune. We just bury the old tissue with sand and let that spur the new growth process. At the same time, making that sand application covers up old leaves from prior years and gives us an extra, you know, an extra cushion. It buries old pathogens. It buries bug seeds a little deeper. And so this super, you know, natural, easy, well, I can't say easy, but this very straightforward, I can call it centuries old because they noticed this happening naturally out in Massachusetts. So centuries old practice really gives us a big boost against disease, against insects, and toward having fresh growth. So we love every winter. If it was a cranberry grower's ideal world, we'd have a really great cold snap and we'd put up 18 inches of ice. And then we could get out and do that sanding while also letting that ice protect the vines from the cold. A person hates to see it be 40 today, but it does look like our ice is going to survive in most cases, since it looks like we will get to dip back below freezing again before too long here. And so right now, after last winter, people have their sand, and in generally that sand comes from the cranberry marsh property itself. So it's usually on farm sand. That's the, you know, the natural counterpart to the marsh there. So everyone kind of makes a pile of their sand and they filter it to take out big rocks. So everyone had their sand ready to go last winter and did not get to do sanding to speak of at all last winter. So this winter we kind of have even a little more sand ready because we want to make up and kind of do 2 years worth. But it does look like we will at least get, for a majority of growers, get that basic level of sanding in. We're very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, as you say, it's been this way for centuries. Having last winter really startled a lot of people and said, okay, if we don't have ice, what are we going to do to get our fresh vines? What are we going to do to get our pathogen protection? What are we going to do? And so that's actually one where we've with Extension, we have virtual brown bags, and I actually hosted a grower panel this December with growers from Washington State and from Massachusetts and New Jersey to kind of share that information. Hey, if you don't have ice, how do you get sand out? And so their answer is barges. And so they bring it out like floating on water. And so all cranberry growers in Wisconsin right now are saying, all right, I hope it doesn't come to that. I really hope it doesn't come to that. But at least we were able to share that information and we've got a place where we can start thinking and we can start developing new machinery or whatever might be needed. In case the world does develop that way, we're not going to be caught flat-footed.
You know, this, and I think this is so key, not just with this industry or with the ag industry, but just in general going forward. And I find a lot of encouragement in what that answer you just gave, and not just, again, for those factors, but just as a human being. I just find that very cool and very interesting. And I'm also a big believer in silver linings. And while we wish that last winter was different and the ice conditions were certainly different, it sounds like there were some positives to come out of that.
And I think we have the same kind of belief in, you know, the human power of rising to the challenge and making the best of a bad situation. And I'm always glad when we can share with growers in other regions, when we can share ideas of what's worked. And I do think that does bring nationwide our industry a little closer together when we can say, hey, you know, we're facing similar challenges. How do you work through these? And so I'll take that. I'll take that as the silver lining. If last winter needed us to get startled in order to reach out, hey, I'm glad we reached out, and I'm glad we're making those connections now.
And just like with information and the importance of sharing that, and how much that a rising tide raises all boats, so can encouragement. So can, you know, you can be as you touched on before, kind of a lighthouse at the light at the end of the tunnel here, an encouragement. Well, if they can do this, maybe we can, or what they're doing there, maybe we can with our industry. So not just with the cranberry industry, but other ag parts of the ag industry in general can be a real, you know, really encouragement to people out there that are struggling with this.
Very much so. One that is in a... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Please.
I was just going to say there's a similar vein. There's an organic grower who's a little north, I think, Oneida County, that will often go to other organic conferences, not just within the cranberry industry, because that's a fairly niche market and there's only so many people to share with. But he saw people using geese to eat weeds. And he then said, well, I'm going to try that too. So we had an organic grower this summer get weeder geese to basically eat the weeds in his new plantings. And he can't have those in his production beds because obviously you can't have live animals in the food chain. But as long as he has those out 2 years before he starts producing harvests from those beds, and usually a bed takes 4 to 4 years to make a full crop. So those first 2 years after he plants, he now has geese walking around eating about 90% of the weeds, and that seemed really cool.
That is
a great way to share.
Yeah, that is really cool. And I maintain there aren't many more creative people than people in this industry. Just the creativity is awesome to see, and really great to hear. We're speaking with Allison Johnjack, cranberry outreach specialist with our friends at UW Extension. I'm curious, Allison, do you think that the sanding is a culture is going to get bigger or be more of a prevalent going forward?
Well, I mean, as far as sanding, already,
I
want to say 100% of growers do it. I actually got a call. When you plant a cranberry bed, you expect that to keep producing for 50 years, for 80 years, for 110 years. The only reason you'd make a new planting is if you want to change varieties. And the way that we keep our beds in production for 100 years, it couldn't happen without that sanding practice. If you weren't sanding, if you think of like a lilac, you know, those lilacs, they get, if you know like an old farmstead where they had lilacs and then no one's living in that house anymore, and those lilacs just get taller and taller and taller, and they only have flowers in like the very outside edge, and then you kind of look through and the rest of the lilac basically is just dead old wood. It would be the same with a cranberry. If you never sanded it, you would never get, your old tissue would just build up forever, and the old tissue doesn't produce as much fruit. So we have to sand in order to keep those vines able to produce for 100 years.
I tell you, I do my homework for these interviews, and I still learn stuff from you guys every time you join us. That's so interesting. Thank you for that, Allison. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
We have an appreciation as well we want to send out for our local irrigation and water management companies out there.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was inspired at our cranberry school having, for the first time in several years, that double track. So we had not only researchers present, but also a few experts in cranberry infrastructure, and we had people present on some new, you know, field information, but we also had presentations on irrigation design in cranberries. And while that focuses on frost protection in the season, you know, in the growing season, it also does include that infrastructure that's required to let the cranberry growers put a flood on when we have a cold snap and they want to take advantage of that cold snap and make ice as fast as possible. So I just, you know, people who are based in the central Wisconsin area, so, you know, when you see Wisconsin Flowgate or Tessman Brothers Irrigation or Roberts Irrigation and then Timewell on the drainage front, like when you drive past those places, when you see those trucks, you can smile and say, hey, I'm really grateful for the extra, the expertise and the knowledge that you have and that you're able to share with the cranberry growers to help make the cranberry growers' lives easier and help keep Wisconsin Rapids and central Wisconsin and Wisconsin as a state, you know, top of the industry and make everybody's lives a little bit better.
You know, years ago, we had two owners ago, we had a new ownership coming in and we were going to be changing a lot of things here at the station. And I was talking to him and I was thinking a lot about our ag industry and a lot about what we do here at WFHR for over 80 years. And one of the things that stood out to me is we are like the ag industry. We are locally grown. And Marcus loved it. And mm-hmm. We use it as a tagline to this day, locally grown radio. But along with that, the buying local, supporting local and how important that is to us. And that's certainly it runs even deeper when we talk about our ag industry. I don't know that there are many industries that bleed into everything else in our lives like the ag industry does, whether we're talking about the food that we eat and we feed to our loved ones, or we're talking about our taxes, our economy, or anything else. And all of that being said, this doesn't happen without certain key companies, without certain individuals out there that don't get highlighted very often. I appreciate so much you doing this. And when we talk about buying local, supporting local, it extends farther than some of the things that you think of off the top of your head, your mom and pop shops or just, you know, even looking for the Made in Wisconsin red label on products and stuff. Those are very important. But just like as Allison was mentioning there, these great companies as well that really are supporting of what we're doing here.
And the expertise that you can't find, like it is really, really vital to have supporting industries be lockstep and local with the work that's being done. That's the best way to solve problems when you can see what's going on. And we're just really grateful. Obviously, cranberries are a niche industry through and through. And, you know, as we talk about sanding and we talk about like, well, maybe I'll build a barge. And it's very individual sees a problem and an individual solves the problem. Nobody else is going to solve it for you. But those local partnerships and the local expertise really allows us to do that with a tight feedback loop. And so we're very lucky.
It's a really nice point. And you just made me think of, you know, those original growers, those first growers of cranberries in this area, in this state, to think of, I don't think anybody could have imagined how big not only this would be to our state, but how much pride we'd be able to take in it, how much, you know, we'd be able to really use this. You know, Cranberry Blossom Fest, so many of the different things that we have around here that are extend from the cranberry growers. And that's something else that's noteworthy to this, too. That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just really love the fact that we grow cranberries exactly where nature wanted them to grow. It's that, you know, we said, well, what can we do with this land? Well, there are already cranberries growing here. Let's try to see if we can make it a little better. Mm-hmm. And the native fruit of the state really, I feel obviously so proud, and I'm glad that I'm able to share that pride with so much of our community.
And, you know, we follow Mother Nature's lead, the great things that can happen, you know, it's really something.
Absolutely.
Allison, always love talking with you and hanging out with you. Looking forward to hanging out and talking again really soon. If people have follow-up questions, they would like to know more about some of the topics we've touched on here, how can they reach you?
Absolutely. So fruit.wisc.edu has a lot of the kind of the recent deeper dives. If you go to fruit.wisc.edu and then /cranberries, or there's a button you can click on for cranberries. You can also email me, which is allison.johnjack@wisc.edu. And then another fun thing, if you really like to dive into agronomy, we have the Cranberry Back to Basics kind of little program that consists of about 30 little videos that we like to offer when cranberry growers hire new people who aren't familiar with the cranberry industry and want to get that quick agronomic background. if you Google cranberry back to basics, you can look through that and find some pretty fun, intros to a lot of the world of cranberries. So I'd encourage people to check all of those out.
Yeah, I second that. I got to check that out a little bit myself, and I really enjoy it. And I do my homework for these interviews. I feel like I know a lot, and then I talk to you, and I'm like, I just learned like 18 things. I really enjoy it. And you do a great job, Allison. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care, and we'll talk again real soon.
All right, take care. So long.
Big thank you to our friends over at Extension joining us like they do. Big thank you to Allison and the whole team over there. We'll say hi to our friends at Extension. We're going to wrap up Midday Magazine tomorrow. We'll have a great one lined up for you. In part one, Amy Schultz of Girl Scouts of Northwestern Great Lakes is going to be joining us. That'll be a great one. And in part two, we wrap up the week with the Charles and Joanne Lester Library in Nakusa. Darla Allen going to join us. Our good friend Darla going to be here. That's going to be great. Wonderful way to wrap things up. Be listening for that and more. And keep in mind that you can find our podcast of all these interviews, past and present, at civicmedia.us. Just go to civicmedia.us, go under shows, Midday Magazine will pop up, click on that, and you'll be able to find these. Not only be able to listen to them yourself, but share them and share these interviews on your social media. You never know who might see them otherwise. And we'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.